Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 77. Here with my good friend Macon Phillips, longtime fan and fellow parent who just had his second baby about 2 weeks ago. And this is his, I think, first outing to have a beer and also to talk about fish. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. I'm super excited to be here. As you mentioned, in addition to talking about fish, I'm actually able to get out of the house and relax for an hour and talk with one of my buddies. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we've been working on this for a while, so glad to make it happen. Macon is the former digital director at the White House, and now he's the coordinator at the State Department's Bureau of International Information Programs. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that in your other work, Macon, as we talk about kind of the influence of technology on fish and some of those things. Macon's on Twitter at Macon. You should follow him if you don't already. But let's jump in. Let's just talk about your kind of history with fish, how you got into the band and when you first saw them, and tell us that story.
All right. Yeah. So I'm certainly not someone who professes to be an expert of fish, the music. I really enjoy fish. And I think that folks might find this podcast is a little bit less about the technical ups and downs of fish, as much as just sort of the culture and the experience of really enjoying that music. For me, it was in 1996 when I first saw fish. I got in a car in Durham, North Carolina, was at Duke University, and we drove down to Charlotte for a show. I looked it up. It's the October 26th show in Charlotte. Never heard fish before. I mean, I think maybe if you had played Fee or something, I would have said that's, I guess, familiar. I might have heard it in like the dorms or something. But being from Alabama growing up, not really listening to a lot of, frankly, a lot of good music growing up, I didn't know at all what to expect. I just was going with some guys I wanted to impress and felt like it'd be a fun road trip to take. And so we went. And I was blown away. I thought it was just an amazing experience, not just because of the music, but because it was like a whole room. And this was the Charlotte Arena. Yeah. I don't forget what it's called. Yeah. But it's like the whole place just kind of moved up and down with this music. Nice. And everyone knew the words, and everyone was turning to each other and kind of completing each other's sentences. And like they were singing, you know, and of course, there are people spinning, you know, in the that little band of light that comes in those arenas at the concourse level, and there's all these people spinning around, and I just thought this was just the craziest thing I'd seen, and I found myself dancing to songs I had never heard, and I was hooked, and it didn't hurt that I was a freshman in college at that point, and so basically spent the next 4 years of my life with Fish and a bunch of other great bands, but really Fish is sort of the soundtrack to what we did. Nice. And then the other part, which kind of is how we know each other, is Fish it sounds really cheesy, but it certainly had a huge impact on my life in terms of how I made choices. And now that I'm looking back on that, I probably should have factored in some more significant criteria to those choices. But I found myself in 2002 not sure what I wanted to do. I was living in San Francisco. Not really going anywhere fast, and moved back to Alabama, tried to figure out what I wanted to do. My dad wanted me to go to law school. I didn't really want to do that. And I sort of thought to myself, why don't I move to Vermont? There's this band I really like called Fish. It's from Vermont, and I'll just pack up the truck and find a job there and get up there. And I did. I really just wanted to live somewhere where it snowed and a place where a band like Fish could be from. And I moved up there in 2000, late 2002. It's where I met your wife.
Yeah.
At the time, she was just Rachel in Norwich, and we were hanging out and met a bunch of other mutual friends of ours. And that started sort of the next chapter of my life, including a lot of great fish shows, great fish memories. But living in Burlington and being a fish fan, I feel like are, for me, sort of peas in the pod. I think of Fish very much as that period of my life and very much as what I like best about the community and the ethic of being in Vermont. So Fish for me has a very long-standing personal connection. That's more than just the music itself. It's certainly about the culture and certainly about the band.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we're going to play some tracks that make and shows that kind of, I think, span the length of your experience with them, which is awesome. And you might hear your Macon's going to open a heady topper because as we're talking about fish and
break open a little Vermont.
In Vermont, yeah. We had to do that. So Macon, just want to go back to the when you were talking about your history with fish. It seems like in contrast to a lot of people who discovered fish through the Dead or through other music, sounds like it was the opposite for you, and fish was kind of your first entry point into other similar music.
That's right. And I think we should acknowledge two things. One, that we just fixed the microphone, so things are going to sound a little bit different. And the other is that we're speaking in the shadow of a giant Coventry poster, which RJ has in this room for some reason, which we'll get to later. But so growing up in Alabama, I wasn't a big music guy. I wasn't someone in middle school, high school who was really into a lot of stuff. It really was just like pop and stuff that made it down. Going to college, you know, it was like that classic scene from every movie about going to college where the dorm windows are open and the music's coming out. And it's like, what is all this stuff? And that was awesome. I had a lot of friends who were really into fish. A lot of friends from New England who had been following them for a while. And so a lot of eager tutors to get me up to speed on this. In fact, I had one of my best friends from college went to Taft, which is where Trey went, and was very, very proud of that. And so, you know, a lot of people who were kind of teach me about all this stuff. But yeah, it was the beginning. Yeah. It was college for me.
Nice. And I think people who aren't familiar with Duke, as you said, you went there, wouldn't maybe think of it as a hippie, you know, a school where you'd be exposed to fish and the Dead and stuff. But it sounds like you did get that exposure.
Well, yeah. I think that, you know, I mentioned earlier that I find the culture of fish so fascinating, and fish fans so fascinating. I should admit, you know, that I was the guy who arrived at fish. My first fish concert, I arrived in a Range Rover. All right. I was one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of the fraternity guys who was like into the scene. And, you know, I look back on that. It was really fun, but I also get that it was completely incongruous with a lot of other things that are happening. But that was kind of what made fish interesting, is like the lot scene was like Range Rover, VW bus, old Honda Civic, grilled cheeses, and, you know, the latest and greatest sound systems, and all this stuff was kind of mishmashed together. It was kind of this equalizing playing field in terms of economics.
Yep.
I think demographics and culturally, there's a lot of white people. It was pretty homogenous in that sense. But
yeah,
in terms of economic, it was really flattening there. So I was definitely, I arrived as a prepster. I think that since college, I've certainly personally become less of that. But that was my entry point, was like the fraternity scene.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think a lot of people had that experience in different areas. So what's your take on sort of where fish is now? How do you feel about what you've seen and heard in 2014, 2015, the past few years?
Well, it's great. I think it's on two different levels. First off, in terms of the music, you know, I think the music is so fun to listen to. And I say that as someone who came of age with fish, sort of came to know them in 90, we were just talking about this, 96, 97, which for me is like just so, it's my sound. I've certainly gone back, and I like listening to stuff from like the Colorado shows and the really early on, and then one of my favorite albums is the Roxy shows in 93, and I love a lot of just the sort of rock and roll stuff that's happening. But by 97, I mean, it was just funky, and you feel the room, you can kind of take yourself to a different place because the music has so much of a shape and so much energy in it. And then of course, I think things got weird. We were just talking about this. They got super weird.
Yeah.
And that tracked actually with when I moved to Vermont. You know, I moved up there in 2002 and was there until around 2005, 2006. And yeah, that was, you know, weird. And the Coventry poster notwithstanding, I think it was a time to maybe move past. What's been great is to see them roar back. And we've been to a few shows together at Merriweather. And I think it's just so gratifying to see these guys have
come together, drifted apart, and if anything's clear, they are having a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
On the stage, and the crowd is too, and I think that ultimately that's really all that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it. And so I just want to shift gears a little bit. As I mentioned, Macon has a career history working in technology, and really I think knows more than most people I know about sort of the evolution of technology, particularly in the music side, has sort of changed the way that we interact with music and how we interact with information in general. So I'd love to just kind of get into that a little bit. I know you worked on whitehouse.gov, and you worked in the White House on the digital team, and so you were kind of at the forefront of when data and politics kind of came together, and how in opening that information to people is the way I would put it. You might put it differently, but what's your sort of take on how technology influenced the evolution of Phish, and in from the fan side, from the band side, just wherever you want to start?
Yeah. Well, I should say that at the beginning, I wrote a paper in college. Ahead of this, I tried to look it up, but I can't find my papers from college, which may actually be a good thing. But I remember I took this extracurricular course in 2000, and it was a woman who worked at the Duke Library, and I guess they had a program where people in the Duke community could teach a course.
Mm-hmm.
And she clearly had been waiting for this for a long time, and she said, "I want to teach a course about the Grateful Dead."
Nice.
And she came with a lot of knowledge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was pretty intense. We basically got the So Many Roads box set.
Yep.
And basically listened to the whole thing, and she would talk about every track, and then we would write papers about it. It's kind That's of a great awesome. Gig if you can get
yeah.
it, you know. But it was half credit. I ended up writing my paper on the commonalities between Phish and the Grateful Dead in the context of how their fan community is organized.
Nice.
Which I can't believe I actually had an idea that was that durable
coming out
of college. But, you know, I think that technology obviously just made that so much easier. What really got me into... I think looking back on it, what really got me into Phish more than any other band was first the music, but second, the community, in the sense that I was someone who did a lot of B&Ps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had someone...
Same here.
Yeah, you know, I had an account at Rec Music Phish. I figured out what the Usenet was and like all this stuff. And this is like late 90s, early 2000s. I went back and looked at some of my posts, and it's, you know, kind of weird to do that. But I just remember like people would... post these shows, and all of a sudden I would get this like padded envelope, right, with at first cassettes and then blank CDs, and people would include like little extra gifts and things, and it was this really interesting social network that happened on a pretty it was a pretty flat context with Usenet, and all of a sudden you had all these people exchanging media, exchanging music, and that really got me into a sort of deeper level with Phish than, say, any other band. So, you know, I sort of started there, and then, you know, that only grew. I have to admit, now that I've, you know, got two kids and working full-time, I haven't been able to be as close to everything as I'd like to, and I can only imagine what the social media scene around Phish has become. But I think in the same way, it's not to sound too cheesy, as someone who came to this industry working for Barack Obama in terms of how you use social media, all these new tools, these new platforms, Twitter, Snapchat, whatever the next thing's going to be, they reflect the fundamental ethic of the principal organization. So in Barack Obama's case, he was a community organizer, and so they arrived at these tools thinking, how can we use these tools to empower people to go knock doors in their own neighborhoods? How do we make it easy for you to give us a few bucks? How do we actually elevate people's own messages about why you know, the president means a lot to them, or a certain issue means a lot to them? It all came from the fact that Barack Obama was a community organizer in Chicago. And I think similarly, the reason that Phish and a number of other bands have been really successful is that they fundamentally are about people sharing their music, mm-hmm. and about the community around their music. And one of the first choices that Phish made that ensured, to my mind, their success was not just allowing the exchange of tapings of their shows, but encouraging that, setting aside taping sections, really making sure that data, that media could be out there. Without that, I think it would be a very different story here in 2016. I brought for moral comfort my Fish Companion
that book.
I bought. Yeah, and I was looking at it. It's from 2000. And even then, the community compiled all of the set lists, essays, and all these other amazing things with a very, very basic internet. I mean, if we think back, it makes us feel like old guys, you know,
yeah.
to think about the tools that were around then. To think that I'm holding this massive volume and there's been 16 years of Fish since.
Right.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's about a band or about a principal organizing group that values the relationship with its supporters or with its fans enough to share in something and not try to have it one way. And I think that's why Fish, for me, is a great, great band, great, great American band.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, I started doing the BNP scene in the mid-90s. I think 95 was my first year, and we had dial-up, and, like, it would take a while for the Goodeal page to load.
Right.
But then you'd get the packages in the mail, and then you'd maybe meet those people later. And it's amazing now. You mentioned social media. A lot of our fans of this podcast have come to us through Twitter. And there's some amazing conversations happening. And with the amazing conversations come a lot of bullshit, too. You know, the people who complain about, like, why are they playing this song so much? Or why don't they play more new songs? Or why are they playing so many new songs? Or why don't they play any more new songs? You know,
right.
It's like, so you get that, you get the signal and the noise or whatever the metaphor is. But you get, like... You get the best and the worst.
Yeah, totally.
And
your comment actually made me think of one thing that I hadn't occurred to me before, which is, I think we're pretty lucky, or we need to at least realize that we are very unique to be in this moment of transition technologically. Which is to say that you and I went to college when they had card catalogs in libraries, but if you talk to a college student now, they don't even know what that is, right?
Yeah. They used to have books in libraries.
Right. Well, yeah. So the whole notion of a BNP is interesting because BNPs, you know, been done for a long time and Deadheads did it for a long time, but certainly Usenet and technology made it much more efficient. You could, do the deal online and then just throw it in the mail, right?
Yep.
But now in the age of Fios and high-speed internet, why would you ever do that? It's all on the internet, right? And so for... 2 or 3 years, for just this quick moment in time, technology had kind of created these connections, but still had the friction where people had to actually take the time to buy the CDs, put it in those padded envelopes or whatever, mail it, right?
Yep.
Remember that whole, like, you were like, oh, God, I promised this guy to mail it, and I just don't want to go to this, you know?
Yeah.
For a moment in time, you actually saw a very unique kind of transaction that, frankly, our kids will never understand.
Yeah.
Just the way it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And there, one interesting thing you mentioned about the sort of the Dead, and if you look at like three different bands, the Dead and Fish and Humphreys McGee as sort of the more cutting edge in terms of technology, all three bands, I think, embody that same principle of open sharing, open access, you know, like take whatever of our music you want, share it with people, be good people, etc. The Dead were kind of, you know, that happened before digital technology. Fish, I think, is like now that technology is so advanced and they're not personally necessarily involved. Like Trey's not on Twitter. Mike's on Twitter and Instagram because he's like a weird dude. But like the rest of them aren't really, they don't necessarily embrace technology, but they see it as a powerful vehicle for getting their music out to more people. Whereas on the other extreme, Humphreys is like they have the same point of view, but they're like, they're all on Twitter, they're all engaging, they're giving their fans headphones at shows to like listen on to the soundboard, you know, they're because they're digital natives more or less, they're like, they're part of that, you know, in a way that Fish wasn't, because they just didn't grow up with it. So I feel like they see it as a vehicle, but they're not like, they're not personally part of it, because it just, they're all a little too old, you know.
Yeah, I think that's right. Although I have to say, having worked in this area for a decade and more now, old dogs can learn new tricks for sure. That said, I don't think Phish, the members of Phish, the boys, so to speak, are going to learn new tricks. I mean, I was thinking about this coming in because you asked me this. You know, what could they do better? The truth is, what do they need to do better? I mean, if you listen to any interview with these guys about particularly their early days, they just love to get into a room together and play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they that's what they want to do. And so if they have taken on the challenge of coming up with a way that they can play sold-out shows around the country, come up with new music when they feel like it, have a hell of a lot of fun, you know, I think they've actually solved for that problem. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's hard to say, what about this new technology?
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I'm any of them, I'm going to say, well, look, if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it.
Yep.
I think a band like Umphrey's or a lot of these others, which are great bands, they have a marketing problem. They're trying to like create audience. They're trying to grow.
Yeah.
I don't think Phish is trying to grow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if anything, I think the one area that I've appreciated some progress in, and I think that, you know, from their company and from their marketing standpoint makes a lot of sense, is the Live Phish, the webcasts.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the most sort of underappreciated stories in media right now. Well, that's a pretty grand thing to say, but I think it's underappreciated.
Yeah.
In the same way that like the whole MLB baseball thing is unappreciated as much as it should be, which is to say you've got a band that sells out regularly every show when they tour. So from a market standpoint, they're like Taylor Swift. They decide to go to a place, they sell out, right?
Yep.
Now they're doing $30 a pop shows in people's living rooms, which frankly are a lot easier for me to watch. And they're doing them really well.
Yep.
And without a lot of hype. I mean, it's just the way it is, and it's just worked. So I think that's one area that at least as a fan I've really appreciated is they've made accessibility a priority. Where it's easier for me to consume their shows, to watch their live shows, and certainly love the ticket stub download thing too. They've made accessibility more. But I think there's an important distinction, which is the difference between being a musician and a marketer. I think when you look at an Umphrey's McGee, or probably a lot of musicians moving forward, they're going to be looking at digital media as a source of inspiration, as a source of delivery for their art. I don't think Phish is going to do that. I wouldn't want them to. And I think we may find that Phish is one of the last bands to not natively incorporate that into their art. That's fine. But it's really important that we give them that space and then say as a marketing standpoint, they've really made their music more accessible. They've got the audience they want. And so in terms of innovation on digital, that may be all we see and that may be all we should.
Yeah.
For the future bands, they're going to come up with a bunch of other cool stuff, and I'm really excited to see it. But I think that's probably where things stand right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great take, and I think you're right. I think a lot of people would agree. And hopefully, those of you who are listening, definitely tweet at us and tweet at Macon, and let's have a conversation. Love to hear other people's opinions about that. So we want to get into some music that Macon chose. I guess first, if you're up for it, I think the work you do is really interesting because you've been in quote unquote government for I don't know, eight-ish years now.
Yeah, almost eight.
Almost eight. And I think there's a lot of like there's just the role of government. The conversation about that is just, you know, people are like, what does the government do that's interesting or innovative? And I think the work that you're doing at State is really innovative. Can you just tell us in a couple minutes sort of what you're up to and what the goal is, what you're trying to do?
So I'll try to start with Phish and then work into the White House and State Department, how that all works. So when I lived in Vermont, after I moved up there in 2002, in 2003, met another close friend of mine who worked for the Howard Dean campaign. And we had this flop house. One of our other roommates ended up being my wife, so it's all worked out well. And he would come back from work at the Dean campaign, and we would sit out on our porch, drink beers, and kind of marvel at the fact that you could send out an email and people pull out their credit cards and try to give a few bucks to help the campaign. That people would go online and try to find people who share their interest in Howard Dean. As someone from Alabama, I really appreciated the power of that idea. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it's very similar to like people who like a certain kind of music connecting online and, you know, getting together and listening to that together. So that social aspect of politics, not just the fundraising, but the social aspect that technology really could bring to politics. What really took hold for me then, in 2003, 2004, I moved down to Washington, worked for a company here doing consulting work with that friend, and eventually took a job at the Obama campaign in Chicago, and we won. That was a great experience. Moved back to D.C., in 2008 for the transition. 2009 came in the White House. 2013 left the White House to go to state. So basically the White House, we looked at how we can use technology to open up the work of the White House, to make sure we're communicating the president's message and to give people an opportunity to participate in the administration. It was an amazing experience. And one of the most gratifying things has been since I've left to see that team take it to the next level. And I think that we'll all look back on those 8 years, a big source of pride of how we supported the president, made a big impact for the country using digital at the White House. Definitely. But in the last 2.5 years at state, I focused less on just digital, more holistically, how do we communicate with foreign audiences around the world? And many of you may be thinking, well, gosh, there's a lot of those specific issues right now, and you know, counterterrorism and so many others. There are specialized teams that work on that. I'm dealing a lot more with issues like climate change, how we're dealing with new generations of young leaders in Africa, looking at in Asia, how we're dealing with new generations of young leaders there and the relationship with the United States. Really a wide variety of issues, but really getting at the idea that technology has changed how countries, in this case, have relationships not just with other governments, but with the people in those countries. Yeah. How do we inform them? How do we listen to them? How do we organize to collaborate with them? It's been an amazing experience. And you know, the clock's ticking on how much time I have left, and I'm trying to make the most of it. But just an exciting time to be in government and working on this. And you asked earlier, you know, why does government matter? What's the commonality here? You know, at the risk of being a little bit extended, you know, just because I'm on a Phish podcast right now, I'll say, you know, one of the things that I really loved about Phish was its convening power. And I think that's fundamentally what government is. It's this source, this thing that attracts a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life to an event, to some kind of common purpose. And from that, there's a greater good. Mm-hmm. And so I think Phish is much more modest in the impact of that than government, of course. But with government, we have a huge amount of power in the sense that we can bring different actors to the table, that we can communicate a goal and then find the right resources, whether it's in our country or around the world. And that's been the kind of work that that's excited me the most. And when I think about Phish, I think about all the amazing groups that came from fans who were really passionate about the music, including the book that I'm holding and the Mockingbird Foundation. But beyond that, so many other groups that spun out of that community.
Awesome. This has been great, Macon. Thank you for sharing your perspective. We want to get into some music now that Macon chose. Some really great tracks.
So you know, I love the podcast, and I have to say, like, it was intimidating to think, like, what is my list going to be? So my caveat here is that I by no means am saying, if you're, like, new to Phish, for some reason you've just listened to a half hour of two nerds talking about Phish and you're still new, like, what are you doing? But anyway, if you're not new and you're about to listen to this, like, I'm not saying this is the best music ever. What I'm saying is this is really interesting music, and more to the point, it's kind of interesting to me. So I hope you'll just take a look at the track list. If you're not into one, skip on to the next. But there's some great music in here, but it's pretty personal to me.
That's fair. There, we stray into near Coventry territory here.
We get close to Coventry. The thing that shall not be named and that you have a poster of in your room.
The poster in here is like, it's just to remind me how good things are now. It's like
I still have not listened to that show. I still can't.
I think you all will enjoy listening to this stuff, and thank you, Macon. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
thanks a lot, and keep up the great work. It's a great podcast, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Macon's on Twitter at Macon, and we're, of course, on Twitter at HFPod. And send us an email with thoughts, suggestions, questions, etc. And enjoy the music.
She's always dirty when I stroll the avenue, avoiding all the obstacles that terrorize my view. If you are there with me, I trust you to lead the way. When you're not, I follow you and always go astray. In the morning, suspended in the trees. Lunchtime comes, you found your voice. It brings me to my knees. The volume just increases till the resounding echoes grow.
Silent day in the morning, you found your voice and brings me to you. Silent day in the morning. pouring through the land of the brave and free. Don't forget to understand exactly what you put on a tree. Don't believe a florist when he tells you that the roses are free. Take every gold raisin and do with it what you will. Shoot it into third if you know you're gonna climb that.
songs in my mind. They're climbing up my waterfalls and swinging on my vine. So I try to hear the music, but I'm always losing time. Cause it's stepping on my rhythm and they're stealing all my life. Thank you.
birth beat worker. I'm just meant the family business. But for the price of a flagon of rice, the wind buffs the cabin, you speak of your life, or more willingly locusts are lurking. Confuse what you can of Andy. Revise your despise, so if that soak on the wrath that you didn't quite mask, I'm getting it clearly through alternate paths, so mixed in with the signal you're sending. Yeah, I've learned all the facts that I've learned, sat in the chairs and my synapses. Draw dust, collects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. My thoughts are good, they just go fully undone. Wait till I'm old, can I live? But no peace for jazz for tonight. I plug the distress tube up tight. What I say as it flutters away to where all this emotion is kept harmless at bay, not to educate somebody's facts. But you can learn all the facts that I've learned. I sat in the chairs and my synapses. Torture of chalk dust collects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. I'm not so good that they go fully undone. Wait till I'm old, can I? sat in the chairs of my synapses burn. The torture of chalk just collects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. My vessel gets into the gun slowly undone. Just wait till I'm old, can I live while I'm young? Can I live while I'm young?
You're gonna be a genius anyway.